The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Nicole playing Cheryl Wheeler's If It Were Up to Me. She only plays that every time there's a mass shooting in this country. There was a fucking mass shooting yesterday and the goddamn news media didn't report on it. You know why? Only five people were killed. Yeah, five people. No big deal. Sebring, Florida. Who cares? The middle of nowhere. Five people. And it was a white guy, a 21-year-old white guy, who went into a SunTrust bank in Sebring, Florida, and killed at least five people in the branch yesterday. Here from CNN, the suspect called authorities to say he had entered the bank in Sebring, about 85 miles south of Orlando, and began shooting. Authorities identified the suspect as a 21-year-old white man, I'm not going to say his name, who's in custody. Not an immigrant, not an illegal, for you people who insist on referring to human beings as illegals. He wasn't here illegally. He was a 21-year-old Sebring resident who is in custody. And it wasn't immediately clear if those shot were bank employees or customers. The victims have not yet been identified. This is as of yesterday, because it's impossible to find any new information on it, because five people shot dead is not to get the news media off its ass in this country. Oh, I'm sorry. It's not the news media's fault because they're all being fired. Yes, apparently a lot of the big media outlets from Huffington Post on down, a Huffington Post, I guess, now owned by some subsidiary of Verizon, they fired a bunch of people. I don't have the list of all the media outlets who've been firing people. I've been seeing people on Twitter logging on, people who we've been reading at Huffington Post. Oh, sorry, Huff Post now. It's now Huff Post. For years, who are... I think we've got a call coming in. Who are out of luck. They're out of jobs. All right, we'll get back to that. There was other breaking news that happened this week, and that is that the teachers in Los Angeles who were on strike are back. And to fill us in on what's happening in the world of education, I'm really happy to welcome Randy Weingarten back to the show. She is the president of the American Federation of Teachers that you can find at AFT.org. Randy, you with us?
I'm with you, Nicole.
Thank you so much for being here. Sorry, I opened the show with a bit of a rant because usually after a mass murder, a mass shooting, I played this song by an artist named Cheryl Wheeler that, if it were up to me, I'd take away the guns. And I'm just dismayed that there's been virtually no coverage of the fact that there were five people killed in a shooting in a bank in Sebring, Florida yesterday, because I guess five people isn't enough. It's not a big enough deal. But that's a different topic. That's not what you're here to talk about, Randy.
And the NRA just won't work on the streets in Florida, and you're seeing that in terms of what happened with the so-called Parkland Commission that Scott put together and that DeSantis has won. So it's not in their interest to avoid the deaths of folks who have been killed by guns.
Yeah, that's it. That's it.
Sorry, I don't mean to go with your rant.
No, please. Hey, that's what we do here. But I do, you know, there's not a whole lot of good news these days. So when there is good news, I want to shine a spotlight on it. And we got good news this week out of Los Angeles, where teachers and students are back in their classrooms after a 6-day strike. So first of all, congratulations. Did they get what they were looking for?
Well, it's a paradigm shift.
Mm-hmm.
You can't fix everything in one contract, but let me just say that Alex Caputo Pearl and the bargaining team at UTLA and the officers of UTLA, but most importantly, the members, the teachers, the guidance counselors, the librarians, the special ed teachers that I met with, the kindergarten teachers, the early childhood teachers, they rocked it.
Mm.
And even though it was a somewhat inconvenient, parents and kids completely embraced and supported what they did because they created a paradigm shift in LA about the importance of public education and basically the public schools as key and foundational to their success, their futures. So do you ever get everything you want? No. But remember the Rolling Stones song. You can't always get what you want.
Right.
But you get what you need.
Yeah. If you try, sometimes you get what you need.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And since I have a terrible cold, I couldn't sing on key without it, but I'm certainly not going to try now.
I hear it. And you're out in the streets again today instead of resting and feeling better. Where are you today?
We are on our way to Lordstown, Ohio, because in Lordstown, Ohio, and in Hamtramck, Michigan, these communities are about to be devastated because GM has announced the closure as opposed to the retrofitting of the GM plant.
Amazing.
And so there's a town hall today that we have set up with schools throughout the Mahoning County to really look at the effects that this closure is going to do on the community of Lordstown, the community of Warren. And look, corporations, they're not people, but corporations have got tremendous benefits from the government of the United States. It's not just this huge new tax cut that Trump gave them last year, but GM got a bailout when it was about to go under from the federal government 10 years ago. And they have an obligation not just to their shareholders, but to the communities within which these plants are located. And it is devastating when you have basically a one industry town. I've seen it in McDowell County, West Virginia, where we work. I've seen it in New York, where we work. When you have a one company town or a one industry town and they leave, it's devastating to the community. And we need to try to fight that. There needs to be a way that GM reconsiders this decision, retrofit the plant, make the cars that people want at that plant, don't close it, and don't move to Mexico.
Right. Well, that's a great cause, and there should be a lot of that going on. All those plants should be retrofitted, as should our infrastructure. Should the coal miners should be retrained to do things in the new green economy. There's so much of that. It seems like obviously we're stalled while the orange one is holding the country hostage. It's really disheartening. But again, back to the teachers.
LA.
Right. Well, there is LA, and now LA's back in school, and Denver is going out, and a couple of other cities.
Right.
And this after 2018 saw a resurgence of energy around teachers and public school support staff from West Virginia to Arizona to Kentucky and others. Is this a new trend? Is it, because obviously it seems to be working.
Well, what's happened is that people are not taking frustration for an answer anymore, and they're not ending with despair.
Mm-hmm.
There's a sense that we must be the champions for what kids need. We have to be the ones that are out there fighting not just for ourselves, but for the investment that kids need to have a future.
Right.
And what's happened is, I think two things happened, Nicole. Number one, with Trump's election and the climate it created, it was a symptom of a climate of despair and frustration and division and polarization. And in our field, whether it's teaching or nursing, we're the helping professions. We want to make a difference in the lives of kids. We also want to be treated fairly. And so I think it was a wake-up call for everyone that our country could actually become something quite different than one that fights for democracy, fights for diversity, fights for fairness. And I think it started like with the women's marches in January of 17, kind of like a clarion call for action. And so what you see in West Virginia, in Oklahoma, Arizona last year, this year in the charter school strike in Chicago, the LA strike, now in Denver, that we're not taking no for an answer. We're saying, look, we can't do more with less anymore. We have to actually get the resources that we need so that kids can succeed. And stop disparaging us, and stop ignoring us, and stop dismissing us. And so we know that you can only do this together, that regular folks don't have any real power alone.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so whether it's, whether it's at the bargaining table like New York did, New York has a great new contract that it got at the bargaining table, New York City. Miami-Dade has a great new contract, but they fought for the tax increases. 12 districts in your state, people decided to increase their taxes because they knew that schools were not funded enough. So based upon that, you saw the first real raise in Miami-Dade through a new contract about a month ago. But then at places like L.A., 20 months, no bargaining, the administration was recalcitrant, and wanted only to deal with salaries. And the teacher said, no, a public school is better. And we will go on strike to get what we need for the kids. Mm-hmm. And that's what happened. And it turned the city on its head. It turned the conversation about public education on its head. And you know better than most that for 10 years in L.A., just like in Florida, just like in Texas, you had the siphoning off of money to private, unregulated
yep.
charter schools.
Yep.
And people have said, stop making the charters at schools that less than 10% of people go to as the priority. Make the public schools that 90% of our kids go to the priority. And if it takes more than just our pleading with you, if it takes us walking on the streets to get that done, that's what we're going to do.
Absolutely. And Randy Weingarten is with us, the president of the American Federation of Teachers. And here's the thing. Obviously, we value our kids. Those of us who have school-age kids, this is a priority for. I guess people like, you know, Wilbur Ross, who it doesn't apply to them, so he doesn't give a shit. They're more concerned about their own bank bottom lines. But we care about our children, so we want them to have a good education. We should care just as much about the people, the educators, who we entrust our children with every day. But I got to tell you, I looked into pursuing teaching because I'm in a dying field right now. And I'm a college graduate, but with a degree in broadcasting. In order to teach, I not only have to go back to school to get a degree in education, but for most of the positions I looked into, I need a master's also for jobs that pay, what, a $10 an hour wage. I mean, there's a real disconnect here that I don't know how people go into teaching as a profession.
Well, Nicole, if you want to go into teaching, we can help you get the kind of credentialing that you need. But you're right. There's something about, look, I was a lawyer who then became a teacher. I had to get my credentials right. But my law degree was effective enough for my master's in the contract area. And I suspect your broadcast degree would be the same and the work that you have done in broadcast. But we are a profession.
Yep.
And what's happened is there are, you know, I hate to say it's tricks of the trade. There is a real craft in terms of pedagogy, in terms of knowing how to communicate with kids, knowing how to teach, how to, how to put lessons together.
That's right.
Just like other professions, like no one would say, become a lawyer, you wouldn't have to go to law school. Or become a doctor,
right.
You wouldn't have to go to medical school.
Although everybody and their brother thinks they can do a radio show and by way of a podcast. So just say
exactly. But we know that you can. We know that, or at least this teacher knows that she can.
Right.
You know, and respects what journalists do and the work journalists do in this country. But it is the kind of, but like look at the last poll that just came out of USA Today. Over 90% of teachers say they love their job, they want to be teaching, but over 60% of teachers, 40% of teachers have to work a second job.
That's insane.
And ultimately, we do not, you know, we value what we pay for.
Yeah.
And teaching has never been valued. It's been valued rhetorically, but it's never been valued economically. And if we want the best of the brightest, and we want to keep the best of the brightest, we need to value it economically. But in a lot of these places, the strikes or the walkouts have been about conditions for kids, and not just fairness for our members. And so, you know, what you're seeing is teachers actually feeling the double responsibility of not only their own families, but the community in which they
sure.
serve. And I'm so proud of it for this.
Oh, absolutely. When I saw the news reports of the teachers in Los Angeles, where an inordinate amount of the kids are on free or reduced lunch, packed meals for these kids and delivered them to their homes because they knew in many cases they were the only meals these children were going to get. These were teachers who were on strike who did this on
absolutely.
Their own time. So, yeah.
And we had actually, there's a group called Reclaim Our Schools LA, and so the kind of strike fund that we created actually was to help Reclaim Our Schools LA help kids and coordinate parental activities during the strike.
Well, yeah. Well, I my hat's off to teachers. They taught me well. I wish I could repay it. And I thank you for the work you're doing. Randy Weingarten, again, you can find her on Twitter at Randy Weingarten and the American Federation of Teachers. She's the president of that fine organization there at AFT.org. Randy, thank you for calling in today. I know you've been swamped, and on top of that, you're fighting this massive cold. I really appreciate your time.
Thanks, Nicole. Thank you for everything you do. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate it, too. I'll talk to you soon. Take care. Bye-bye. Randy Weingarten. You know, when I heard the news about the teacher strike being settled, I wanted to check in with Randy, who I met a number of years ago at Roots Nation, and she's always been very, very kind to me. We disagree politically on some things, but that doesn't get in the way because she does good work as the president of the AFT. And again, has always been willing to talk, you know, the tough issues, and they deserve congrats for a great victory, and they have more fights on their hand. It's criminal the way we pay our teachers. It's also criminal the way we treat our federal employees. How's that for a segue? Wilbur Ross is in the news today. Before we get to what's news, I want to share this because this happened after I wrote and produced what's news this morning. Wilbur Ross, who's the Treasury Secretary, who apparently goes back decades with Donald Trump, was asked about the furloughed federal workers who are either not working or are even worse, forced to go into work for no pay. That's slavery, by the way. And Wilbur Ross, I'm going to just play you a little bit of this back and forth that happened on CNBC earlier today. So first you'll hear the voice of the CNBC person. When you hear the guy that sounds like he's death warmed over, my name is Wilbur Ross. That's him.
Put it in perspective.
Here.
You're
put
talking about 800,000 workers. And while I feel sorry for the individuals that have hardship cases, 800,000 workers, if they never got their pay, which is not the case, they will eventually get it. But if they never got it, you're talking about 1/3% in our GDP.
And who gives a fuck about 1/3% of the GDP? It's only 800,000 federal workers. If they don't ever get a check, it doesn't really matter. It's a drop in the bucket.
So it's not like it's a gigantic number overall.
Mr. Secretary, there are reports that there are some federal workers who are going to homeless shelters to get food.
Well, I know they are, and I don't really quite understand
why. It's because they have no money, you asshole!
The obligations that they would undertake, say a borrowing from a bank or a credit union, are in effect federally guaranteed.
Oh, my God.
So the 30 days of pay that some people will be out, there's no real reason why they shouldn't be able to get a loan, against it.
Go ahead and get a loan.
We've seen a number of ads from financial institutions doing that.
What a despicable piece of shit. This song is not, it doesn't go far enough.
I want to tell you a story about the brand new world's biggest asshole.
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 It's a brand new story about the brand new world's biggest asshole.
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 His name is
Wilbur Ross.
And he's the new world's biggest asshole.
So the dilemma I'm in today, along with other things that you don't know about and don't need to know about, they're my problems. This asshole is saying, let them eat cake. Get a loan. Who cares if they don't ever get paid? It's just a tiny fraction of the GDP. It's only 800,000 people. They don't mean anything. This is your government under Donald Trump. This is where we are today. Where right now the Senate is voting on these two bills to reopen the government. The first is the Donald Trump plan that he announced last Saturday in his hostage video from the Oval Office. The second would be a clean continuing resolution from the Dems that would reopen the government for 3 weeks or so, but would get those people paid. It would get them a paycheck so they can put food on the table and pay the fucking mortgage, you heartless, pathetic imbeciles. God! I don't think we have a way out of this mess. Let me tell you, what's her name? Kyrsten Sinema. How many people in Arizona did I fight with about Kyrsten Sinema? She voted no. Yes, let me find that exact here. Okay. All right. On the first one, the final vote was 51 to 47. It needed 60. I want to find the, see if I can find it. About, let's see. Dem Senator Joe Manchin votes yes on Trump proposal. Republican Senator Tom Cotton and Republican Senator Mike Lee both voted no. But I want to find the Kyrsten Sinema. Basically, you know what? We'll talk to Howie here. Kyrsten Sinema votes no. Oh, she voted no on the Trump plan to reopen the government with wall funding. I guess that's a good thing. Okay. I must have misunderstood. I want to see how she votes on the Dem plan. All right. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe my rant against Kyrsten Sinema is a bit premature. But I'm sure Howie's paying attention, so I'll check with him in just a few minutes. First, well, I gave you some of the news that happened today. Michael Cohen, who yesterday said he's, you know, Donald Trump and Rudy Giuliani have been threatening his family, so he's not going to testify. Well, now he's received a subpoena to appear before the Senate Intelligence Committee, I think February 12th, as opposed to February 7th. And Elizabeth Warren stepped up. We'll hear more about this, maybe, depending on who's doing the reporting. Senator Warren is proposing a wealth tax on those with more than $50 million in an attempt to combat soaring wealth inequality. Yay. The tax would hit those above $50 million with a 2% wealth tax and those above $1 billion with a 3% wealth tax. It would raise $2.75 trillion in 10 years. Wow, that might even pay for Medicare for All and free college tuition at public and state schools. Go figure. All right, Howie Klein is standing by. Let's first get to what's news. We'll be right back. I'm Nicole Sandler at NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
I read the news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Furloughed federal workers took to the Hart Senate office building on Wednesday. In addition to the chanting, the workers held 33 minutes of silent protest, 1 minute for every day the shutdown has lasted. The Donald Trump government shutdown on Thursday reaches day 34. But Wednesday night brought Trump's first surrender to Nancy Pelosi as Trump backed down on his demand to deliver the State of the Union address next Tuesday. It was one of many fronts in the battle of wills between the president and the speaker. Although Pelosi had basically rescinded her original invitation to address a joint session of Congress, citing security concerns due to the shutdown, Trump ignored her and on Wednesday sent her a letter dismissing her explanation and postponement of the address, writing, quote, "Dear Madam Speaker, thank you for your letter of January 3rd, 2019, sent to me long after the shutdown began, inviting me to address the nation on January 29th as to the State of the Union. I then received another letter from you dated January 16th, 2019, wherein you expressed concerns regarding security due to the shutdown, even prior to asking. I was contacted by the Department of Homeland Security and the United States Secret Service to explain that there would be absolutely no problem regarding security with respect to the event. Accordingly, there are no security concerns regarding the State of the Union address. Therefore, I will be honoring your invitation and fulfilling my constitutional duty. I look forward to seeing you on the evening of January 29th in the chamber of the House of Representatives. It would be so very sad for our country if the State of the Union were not delivered on time, on schedule, and very importantly, on location." So that's what Trump ostensibly wrote. Obviously, somebody else helped him write it because there were no spelling errors. Anyway, Nancy Pelosi responded with a letter of her own, which Trump was made aware of by a reporter at a press pool spray.
Mr. President, Nancy Pelosi just responded and she said she will not consider a concurrent resolution to have you come to the House on January 29th, as literally as State of the Union. Your response to the House Speaker.
I'm not surprised. It's really a shame. What's happening with the Democrats? They've become radicalized. They don't want to see crime stop, which we can very easily do on the southern border. And it really is a shame what's happening with the Democrats. This will go on for a while. Ultimately, the American people will have their way because they want to see no crime. They want to see what we're doing. Like today, we lowered prescription drug prices the first time in 50 years. They want to see that. The Democrats would never have been able to do that. So we're all working very hard. We'll have to respond to it. We'll respond to it in a timely manner.
That part about lowering drug prices is an outright lie. Just doing my part and calling him out on them. But back to Pelosi's response. She sent a letter that read thusly. Dear Mr. President, when I extended an invitation on January 3rd for you to deliver the State of the Union address, it was on the mutually agreed upon date, January 29th. At that time, there was no thought that the government would still be shut down. In my further correspondence of January 16th, I said we should work together to find a mutually agreeable date when government has reopened. And I hope that we can still do that. I am writing to inform you that the House of Representatives will not consider a concurrent resolution authorizing the President's State of the Union address in the House chamber until government has opened. Again, I look forward to welcoming you to the House on a mutually agreeable date for this address when government has been opened. Nancy Pelosi repeated over and over again. Then at 11:12 p.m. on Wednesday night, Trump raised that white flag of surrender via Twitter, of course, where he said of Pelosi's decision to change the date of the State of the Union, quote, "This is her prerogative." Now, since he spelled prerogative correctly, I'm guessing someone else drafted this tweet as well that continued, "I will do the address when the shutdown is over." Next up, two votes in the Senate on competing proposals to end the shutdown. Trump's offer to extend DACA and TPS protections for 3 years, and the Democrats' clean continuing resolution that would fund government for 3 weeks and, more importantly, get the federal employees paid. Both are expected to fail. Now, if you were stocking up on popcorn for the February 7th congressional testimony of former Trump lawyer and fixer Michael Cohen, well, you're probably out of luck. Cohen on Wednesday indefinitely postponed his scheduled testimony, citing, quote, ongoing threats against his family from the President of the United States and his lawyer, Rudy Giuliani. That sounds like witness tampering to me, and it's against the law. Democrats are looking at issuing subpoenas to get Cohen's testimony. And finally, it's another day in America. At least five people were shot to death in a bank in central Florida. Police say a 21-year-old man entered a SunTrust bank in Sebring, which is about 85 miles south of Orlando, and started shooting before barricading himself in the bank. The suspect later surrendered and was arrested. There is no word yet on a motive. And that's a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com/donate.
This is a huge, huge issue.
And we're talking about it. The Nicole Sandler Show on Progressive Voices and NicoleSandler.com.
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and french fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 orange juice. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acetic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies. tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com on The Nicole Sandler Show.
Yay, it's that time of the week again. I got to tell you, Howie Klein, last week I was a little under the weather and I canceled the show, and somebody made a donation, a contribution to the program, and he said, just please don't ever take off a Thursday again. I missed Howie Klein.
Oh, that's so nice. Thank you,
yeah,
whoever that is.
Nice. And I didn't write down his name, or I would thank him, give him a shout out. But got it, and I thank you, and I understand, because we need our Howie fix. So Howie, right now there's the votes going on in the Senate on the dueling bills to reopen the government. The first one that they voted on was the Trump's deal that he laid out in his bullshit Oval Office address on Saturday. They needed 60 to pass the procedural vote to move on. The vote was actually announced incorrectly. It went down 50 to 47. This was Trump's plan. The defectors were Manchin, of course, voting for it, the lone Democrat to vote for it. Cotton and Lee crossed over and voted no. And I guess now they're voting on the Democrats' clean continuing resolution to see what happens there.
Wow, I wonder, that's surprising about Cotton and Lee. I wonder what that's about.
I think they realize that they're being hurt by this never-ending shutdown, that it's really bad. Sahil Kapoor just tweeted, the vote currently stands at 51 to 44. Unless somebody switches to no, the Democratic plan to reopen the government without wall money will get more Senate votes than the Trump plan that includes wall money. But they both fail anyway.
Right, because a couple of Republicans have announced that they were going to vote with the Democrats, including Cory Gardner from Colorado,
right,
and Lisa Murkowski from Alaska. Presumably the Democrats will get, or they may get, I guess, or maybe she voted already, Susan Collins from Maine.
Mm-hmm.
So that's three. I wonder if Cotton and Lee would cross over as well. That would be amazing.
Well, here's one from a few minutes ago. Senate ARDs defying the president and voting with Dems on a non-wall continuing resolution. Lamar, I guess that means Lamar Alexander, Collins, Gardner, Isaacson, and Murkowski. Romney.
Wow, Isaacson, amazing.
Isaacson, isn't it? Romney, of course, voted yes. Go figure.
Yeah, he said he would.
Ugh, he's such a hypocrite, but we knew. We knew.
Yep. So, oh, we did.
Yep. So now
here
we go. So, and Manchin voted yes on both. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
So they're not going to be able to. Neither of these bills will pass. So the government remains shut down. Wilbur Ross basically gave his "Let Them Eat Cake" interview today. Oh my God! Did you hear what he said?
Did I hear what Wilbur Ross said? Of course. I mean, he's Marie Antoinette. Yes.
Yeah. Unbelievable. I mean, and here we are. I'm in a pretty pessimistic state right now, but I don't see a way out of this.
Yeah. I mean, they something will happen. I mean, Trump can only do this for so long before the Republicans turn on him. To see Johnny Isaacson voting with the Democrats, that gives you an idea that the Democrats will chip away at this. There were 10 yesterday when the House voted to open up the government again with no money for the wall. There were 10 Republicans who voted with the Democrats, including people. You know, I did a list of it for a post that I have coming up soon. And what I marked down were the percentage that each Republican got last time they were elected. So many of them were very, very, very close. So they're just afraid that they will be defeated. But some of them weren't. Some of them were Republicans who have no problem at all, who have, you know, very, very strong support in their districts and very, very red districts. And yet they're also turning against Trump on this. Like a guy like Adam Kinzinger, or someone like, what's his name? I'm skipping my mind. The guy, the one Republican congressman from Oregon, Greg Walden.
Walden,
yes.
Gotcha.
voted with the Democrats as well. There were like, I think, three or four Republicans who didn't have to do it. You know, in other words, someone like Brian Fitzpatrick, he's lucky he won again, and he'll be targeted again in 2020, so he's afraid to vote with Trump. He's voting against Trump on everything now. I mean, he's voting against Trump more than some Democrats are.
Wow.
And there are a few Republicans like that, but the ones who are in completely safe districts that are red as can be, you know, I mean, okay, another one, Simpson in Idaho.
Mm-hmm.
He, you know, Michael Simpson, he's, you know, that's Republican territory all the way. He doesn't have anything to worry about, and yet he voted with the Democrats as well yesterday.
Okay.
So, what I want to say is that, to address your question about hopelessness,
yeah,
is that, you know, it's just going to be a matter of time before the Republicans just tell Trump, you know, either you know, surrender on this the way you surrendered on your stupid State of the Union nonsense, or we're going to abandon you.
Yeah, by the way,
Mitch McConnell is up for re-election in 2020.
Yeah.
And that's going to be the hottest race in the country.
Oh, absolutely.
Other than Trump.
Absolutely. We do need to mention, of course, what you just talked about, that the what happened? I'm just losing my train of thought here. Because you got me on this thinking about Mitch McConnell, and he derailed me.
Sorry.
Yeah, what did you just talk about? Something good that happened yesterday.
The House passed a resolution to basically open up all of these departments of the government, like lots and lots of departments of the government, with no money for the funding. It passed, and there were 10 Republicans that voted for it. That's what I was talking about.
Okay, well, Mitch McConnell refuses to bring them up, and eventually, I guess he's going to have to because. We can't go on like this, and I think the public, we're watching Trump's polling numbers fall precipitously. I think in the latest, I don't know which one, Gallup or something, he's down to like 34 from 40 something. So,
and that's an important number, 34, because I mean it varies, but there are some people that saying once he goes below 33, Republicans will start peeling away from him, and then once he goes below 30. Then there'll be more of a stampede away from him. Like when his approval rating starts with a 2,
mm-hmm.
that's when you'll get Republicans who, you know, go over to Nancy and to Chuck and say, okay, time for impeachment.
Gotcha.
We'll be there with you.
Gotcha. Well, here's what I was looking for. There was a news story yesterday, and I didn't get all the particulars on it, but it sounded like some committee in the Republican Party was working on basically eliminating the primaries for 2020 just to give the nomination to Trump. Is that something they can actually do?
I don't know if it's the same thing that I read, but it was actually the South Carolina Republican Party. You know, maybe there's another thing, other entity that's doing that as well, but the South Carolina Republican Party didn't want a primary. They just wanted to just hand it over to Trump.
Amazing. And hopefully by the time it is horrifying. Hopefully by the time the primaries would roll around, his approval ratings will continue to drop. I can't imagine in what world shutdown is helping him.
He's going to continue being horrible.
Yeah. But the question is he destroying all of our norms, our institutions, our ways of governance in this country in the process? I mean, I think it's a race to the end. Which comes first?
Yeah, I'm not certain, but it's possible that he is. But I kind of have somewhat of an idea that a lot is going to depend on what happens with the person who replaces him. Who are the Democrats going to nominate?
Mm-hmm.
I think all the polling that I've seen shows that any Democrat who gets the nomination. So I'm not just saying, you know, pick anyone off the street, although
right.
that's possible.
Right.
I'm saying that, you know, any reasonable Democrat who winds up getting chosen in the primaries and the caucuses by the Democrats can beat him. So, you know, the poll I looked at showed, you know, Elizabeth Warren beating him, Bernie beating him by a lot, Bloomberg beating him, all of them, Biden even, Beto, all of them would beat him. So then the question becomes, what kind of a president will they be, and will they be able to restore confidence in the government? And will they be able to move forward and inspire people to remember that the government can be a force for good? So, you know, the two models that I'm looking at, one that would be, you know, I'll just call the Biden model, although he's not the only one, but he's the worst of them, would be, you know, sort of the return to normalcy. Now, Warren G. Harding ran on that, and he won, and he was one of the worst presidents in American history. Some people say he was the worst president in American history. I don't know that I'd say that, but he's definitely way up there. And that's Biden. He's the Warren G. Harding of today. It's just all about a return to normalcy. Biden has nothing to offer whatsoever. You know, I was Obama's vice president,
yep,
and that's it. That's all he can say, and that may be enough to get him over. I mean, he has huge name recognition, of course. They're, you know, very, very, very carefully hiding his mental state, so people, you know, when he makes these gaffes and errors, you know, people just sort of joke around and say, oh, he's a gaffe machine. He's actually senile.
Yes.
And you know, imagine hiding that enough to elect this guy to president.
Yeah.
I don't know if they'll be able to.
Well,
you
now
you have two senile people in the, you know, Trump and Biden fighting it out.
Yeah.
Which is shocking and horrifying. And he has no ideas about going forward into the future. He doesn't support things like Medicare for All or the Green New Deal. I mean, he's old in a way that his ideas are old, and his way of looking at the world is old. I don't care about how old he is in number of years, although it's affected him badly. Bernie isn't affected in that way, and Bernie is basically the same age as him, a few months difference, but Bernie has all these great young ideas. Biden and Bloomberg are both squares. Trump has got a hip instincts. Like Bernie. I mean, Bernie is the hippest. I mean, it's a funny word to use, but I've been playing with it for a story I'm writing for tomorrow. And Bernie is a hipster. And I hate to say it, but Trump is in a way as well, in a different kind of way than Bernie. But Biden is just a total square. And so, I mean, Bloomberg, do you see that thing he put out about marijuana?
Yes.
I mean, his views
Goodbye.
On marijuana are
yeah.
like from
Goodbye.
The 1950s.
Yeah, he belongs with Jeff Sessions.
Yeah, exactly. The exact same views as Jeff Sessions.
Exactly.
And you know, he wouldn't understand, and I don't understand why the people around him haven't, you know, said, hey, you know, it's different now. But you know, do we want a president like these squares to come in and to follow Trump? It would be horrible. But you know, you talk about someone like Bernie, or you talk about someone like Jeff Merkley, or someone like Elizabeth. Oh, speaking of Elizabeth
yes,
Warren,
let's speak of Elizabeth Warren.
During the time that I spoke to you this morning,
yep.
and now,
yep,
Elizabeth Warren. I had written this like big long post about a wealth tax, what
okay.
a wealth tax is, and what it would do, and what it means. And then I sent it to Stephanie Kelton to get her to get her opinion, but also because I was hoping she would give me a quote. And she and I have been going back and forth all day, and she doesn't want to give me a quote, but she wanted me to put it out today. She said, "Don't wait, don't put it out tomorrow. Put it out today." And we've been talking about this all morning. I just sent it to her again and with some changes because Elizabeth Warren had just announced, or no, she didn't announce her advisors announced mm-hmm. that they're about to announce that she's going to propose a wealth tax, a 2% wealth
yep.
tax for all Americans who have more than $50 million.
Right.
And then the tax would go up to 3% for people who have over $1 billion. So this is not an income tax. This is a tax on wealth. And the purpose of it isn't just to generate income, although it will generate trillions of dollars, or I should say over $1 trillion.
Uh-huh.
But what it would do is help to bring back a little bit of equality in wealth for America. And it's a really, really, really important proposal. So because Elizabeth Warren, it just broke in the Washington Post an hour or so ago, I decided to move my post up. So when you and I hang up in about 10 minutes,
uh-huh.
boom, the post is going up.
Yeah. Now, this is a really good plan that she's putting forth. It's something to address wealth inequality, which is a huge issue in this country. Here's the problem. one of my loyal listeners in the chat room, I mentioned the story. I gave the very basics on what the proposal was. And what I get is U.S. citizens making over $10 million a year. Why not citizens making over $500,000 a year? Nothing is good enough. Every good idea that any of these candidates puts forth gets shit on by a supposed, you know, liberal. And if we can't come together, we're really screwed. I can't tell you the people I've blocked who've been bad-mouthing Bernie because he's such an awful person. For whatever reason they give, that's all bullshit. This is where we are now, this early in the process. I think we're screwed.
No, I get the feeling that the kind of Hillary Clinton diehards who hate Bernie and will always hate Bernie, they're loud, they make a lot of noise, and then, you know, but they're nothing. They're not, it's not like we're talking about 1% or let alone 5%. We're talking about nothing. We're just talking about a couple of loud, noisy, stupid people.
Yeah, no, you're right. And I have to remember that.
Just ignore them. I wouldn't even block them if I were you. Just ignore them.
No,
completely.
I should. I block them because I don't want to see them in my timeline. And I've been in a kind of a pissy mood lately, and so I'm fighting back against these people. But when I see here's something I want to talk to you about. There was one idiot on Facebook this morning. I know I should stay off Facebook, especially when I'm in this kind of a place. So a person named Brenda Beverly, who I've since blocked. Posts. So after listening to Rachel Maddow last night, I'm all in for Kamala Harris in 2020. Waiting to see.
I saw you tweeting about that.
Interview, and then it gets better. Waiting to see what Beto does. He's the only one that could make me question my support of Harris right now. Are you kidding? Yeah. It is January.
Not everybody looks into it as deeply as you do. They don't know who these people are. I mean, a friend of mine, a very good friend who I went to college with, is a gay guy. Uh-huh. And he's not that into politics. He's a little bit into it, but not really into it. So he fell in love with Beto. He says, I'm supporting Beto. I love him. I'm sending him money. And I said, well, what do you like about Beto? And he said, well, he's so handsome.
Oh, God.
And I said, well, that's why you want a president, because he's so handsome? He said, well, yeah. But isn't he great, though? I mean, doesn't he have good policies and stuff like that? I said, you know, Stephen, Beto has been a congressman for 6 years. Can you tell me something about
anything?
My friend said, he's been a congressman already? I said, yes, he's a congressman for 6 years. Can you tell me something that he's done that you like or don't like? So I didn't even know he was a congressman.
Oh, my
God. Yeah, are you sending this guy money?
He's
been a backbencher. He hasn't accomplished a single thing. He has made no impression on anybody. He hasn't done anything. You know, and he's not your guy, Stephen. Forget him.
And you know what? Do some research. This has been my mantra all day. Read a fucking newspaper. Do your homework. Understand.
Or down with tyranny.
Or down with tyranny. Absolutely. On a daily basis, you should be reading down with tyranny.
Series of posts that I'm still working on called The Worst Democrats Who Want to Be President.
Yep.
And one after the other, I'm you know, talking about, you know, why Kirsten Gillibrand is not fit to be president, why Joe Biden is not fit to be president, why Michael Bloomberg is not fit to be president. So, now when it came to Beto, I did not do that because I don't feel that about him. I'm not going to vote for him,
right.
But I don't put him on the same level as I would put a Kirsten Gillibrand. Same thing with, Cory Booker. I'm definitely not into him, but I've written stuff about his bad record, but I still didn't put him in that category of really unfit to be president, whereas I feel that Gillibrand is. Now, the same thing with Harris. I don't like her. I see a lot of negative things about her. I would really, really pray to God I don't have to ever vote for her. I've never have so far, and I live in California. But she's not as terrible as some of the others. So I wouldn't term her a Democrat.
Right.
But I do say that she is not, you know, my candidate by a long shot,
right.
But not as toxic and horrible as like a Biden,
right?
Who has decades and decades of horrible record. I mean, these people, they're all going around on apology tours. I mean, it's just amazing. You know, one of the greatest moments of TV in the last week was Jake Tapper on, what is that show he does?
The State of the Union.
On CNN last Sunday.
Right.
Where he points out to poor Kamala Harris that she's calling Trump's immigration policies and border policies racist, and then he puts on the screen her campaign from 2008, where she ran on the same policies, and he says to her, "Were your policies racist? They're the same as Trump's. You just called Trump's policies racist. What about yours?" And she looked like someone kicked her in the stomach.
I'll bet. I'll bet.
You know, and all she can do is apologize. But the way she apologized was so inauthentic. She blamed her constituents for her own horrible policies. So in other words, she's saying she's the opposite of a leader. And then she went even further, and this really sickened me. She said that she literally said she couldn't feel the pain of the families who she was abusing. And you know, she didn't use the word abusing, but the family, you know, her policies were destroying people and people's families, and she couldn't feel their pain. Well, we have a word for that. It's sociopath.
Yes.
That is the definition of sociopath, someone who cannot feel empathy for someone else, even as they are destroying that person. And I'm thinking, this is, and you know, she needs to go to a mental institution, or I shouldn't say that. She needs therapy.
Yep.
If she's saying that she's a sociopath, shouldn't be running for president.
No, of course not. Now let me ask you, because there are a few declared candidates who no one's ever heard of. The one guy was on with Chris Hayes last night. You were saying call him.
Didn't you think he was good?
Yeah, he was good, but he was the mayor of South Bend, Indiana. I'm sorry. Good to get. I mean, all the more the merrier. Get all the ideas out there, and he's got some good ideas. But realistically,
does
he stand
you know
a chance
about,
in hell
about
of winning?
I didn't take him seriously, actually. And I did a story about him, and while I was doing the story, I was learning more about him. Mm-hmm. And then when I saw him in action last night on Chris Hayes' show, I really started taking him a little bit more seriously. And, you know, when he pointed out he has all this executive experience as a mayor, of a even though it's just
mayor.
A small town,
yeah.
It's not a small town, a small city of about 100,000 people, when you think about it, the job that he's done is far more relevant to the presidency than anything that Kamala Harris has ever done, or Kirsten Gillibrand has ever done. I mean, what did Kirsten Gillibrand ever do? She was the lawyer for the tobacco companies that lied to us about cancer. She was their chief lawyer. And she's been a senator who, what did she famous for? Did she do anything?
No.
Aside from getting rid of Al Franken?
Right, that's it. She railroaded Al Franken. Well, Howie, I want to ask you about another guy who has been, I guess, he's been a declared candidate for a while now. I never heard of him until the other day when a listener or two mentioned him to me and I sort of poo-pooed him. His name is Andrew Yang. He is an entrepreneur.
Oh, he's very rich, right?
He's very rich, and he's done a lot of philanthropic work. He's actually going to be on the show tomorrow. And I've said, what I learned about him is his ideas are wonderful. I think he's got great ideas. But he's somebody nobody knows. Sorry not to be racist, because I'm not, but he's Asian American, which I think would be a mark against him in this climate.
Maybe a mark for him.
Maybe. So we'll hear him out. He's going to come on tomorrow. Again, this is a good time
to hear what everyone has to offer.
Lou
is one of the most popular politicians in America. People love him.
Oh, I know. He's great.
And he's Asian, too.
I know. I wish he could run for president. But he's got a profile. He's worked in government. This guy, he's done a lot of philanthropic charitable works. He's used his money for good. It'll be interesting to hear what he has to say. I still don't think he's electable, but maybe he'll change my mind.
Right. Well, I don't think he's electable either.
Yeah. So it's still early. This is what I caution people against. Stop it with the, he's my candidate. You know, that's my guy and everyone else can go to hell. Hear them all out. We got plenty of time. All right. The thing we got to unite on.
That's the reason we have them.
Exactly.
So we have an opportunity to hear them out. Some of them may have good ideas. We also have to, what they're all doing is running around and apologizing for their records.
Yes.
Biden is like, all he could ever talk about is how he's sorry he did this and he's sorry he did that.
But he's not
Everything he's done has been just horrible.
But he's not
Kirsten Gillibrand, he's not sorry about everything. Tulsi Gabbard is sorry about everything.
But
we
have to decide,
are they being real?
Right.
Are these apologies for real?
Right. And Joe Biden is not sorry he stumped for Fred Upton, which I think is a career ender right there. Sorry. Just saying.
Did he actually say he's not sorry?
Yeah. He said, I like Republicans, sue me. Or something like that. I mean, just tone deaf. So I'll find that quote for tomorrow. Howie Klein, find him at downwithtyranny.com and, of course, the Blue America Pack. As always, thank you so much, Howie. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye-bye.
Take care. All right. Oh, I'd love to get Ro Khanna. What about Ro Khanna? He's a first-term congressman, not a presidential candidate yet. See you tomorrow, everyone.